Chippy was a little canary about this tall, and he had shiny yellow feathers, and he had little black eyes. And he lived in this cage, a gold-shaped cage, and he had a bowl where they had seed that he could eat, and there was a little swing that he could perch on and swing back and forth. And you know, Chippy loved to sing. He just sing, just warble all the time until from morning until evening, when they would put his owner would put a cloth over it, and then he would spend the night. Next morning, the cloth came off, Chippy started singing. Well, he also had a little cuddle bone. I had to look up what cuddle bone was. It's this little bone that they put in there for them to polish their beak and get some calcium when they peck at it. And it's a good thing that humans don't have to polish their beaks, huh? Anyway, one day, Chippy's owner was vacuuming the floor, and she looked in the bottom of the cage, and you know, sometimes the bottom of a bird cage gets kind of yucky. And so she says, you know, if I'm vacuuming the floor, I think I'll just, you know, open the door and just vacuum out that stuff down there. So she opened the door, and she was vacuuming up the stuff in the bottom of the bird cage when all of a sudden the phone rang. Well, the phone, she left the nozzle of the vacuum cleaner in the cage, and she went to answer the phone, and guess what happened? The nozzle went up and up and up, and Chippy started feeling this wind pulling him, and he put his little claws on the perch, and he's straining, but the vacuum cleaner was too powerful, and Chippy went up the vacuum. When the lady saw it, she goes, "Oh, Chippy, oh, why did I do that?" She shuts the vacuum off, she takes out the bag, she cuts it open, and there sits Chippy, blinking, trying to get the dust out of his eyes. And he's totally covered. He, instead of shiny yellow feathers, he has brown all over him. And she goes, "Chippy, you're alive. Oh, boy, you sure are dirty. Let me help you." She ran and took Chippy over to the faucet in the sink and turned on the faucet. Well, the dirt came off Chippy, but Chippy was there shivering, and he's going, "Man, I wish he would shut this water off." And she cleaned him all up and everything, and then he's sitting there bedraggled, just looking up at her with his little black eyes. Now he's blinking water. She goes, "Oh, Chippy, I'm so sorry. Here, let me help you." And he's probably thinking, "Yeah, I wish you would stop helping me." She ran and got her hair dryer, and she plugged it in, and suddenly Chippy gets this blast of air, and it almost knocks him over, but she hails him there. When her friends came and said, "How's Chippy doing?" And she said, "Well, Chippy just kind of sits there swinging. Chippy doesn't sing anymore. I think Chippy probably had what they call post-traumatic stress disorder. Chippy just sits there in his cage, never sings anymore." But you know, too often, we're like Chippy. We get sucked up in sin, and we get drowned by circumstances, and we get blown away by crises in our lives. And then I think that we don't feel like singing either, do we? We probably have post-traumatic stress disorder as well. So we snarl up at God for what he did to us, And then we go and tear into our friends and neighbors, who they don't deserve that, because we're so angry, we're so upset. If we can't get along with each other here on earth, or have a, let me say we can get along, but if we have a hard time getting along here on earth, what are we going to do when we get to heaven? You know, this earth, this life right now, is in preparation for what? For heaven. We've got a lot of work to do, ladies and gentlemen, in order to get along in heaven, do we not? What we got to do is learn how to rely on God instead of circumstances. And that is really, really hard to do. And I'm not perfect, I can tell you. Ask my wife or son. I'm preaching to myself, too. I have a hard time getting along with family members. I have a hard time getting along with church family members, because I'm thinking about who? I'm not thinking about the other person. Remember when you had a trike? I used to have this little red trike with, shiny red with the white handlebars, and I'd go tooling all over the neighbors, and, you know, I thought that was the coolest thing there is. And I guess I thought all trikes were red, but then I remembered that my son had a green John Deere tractor, I think it was, and he went tooling around with his green John Deere tractor trike, and in fact, he wore out a set of plastic wheels, and then we bought him a second set of plastic wheels, and he wore those out. But, you know, after a while, did you notice that, you know, when you first got the trike, it was really cool, and you thought you were, you know, hey, I got a trike, you know, and then after a while, you didn't like the trike so much? Because the big guys had what? They had bicycles. And two wheels is cooler than three wheels. So you start bugging mom and dad for a bicycle. And then one birthday or Christmas or whatever, you get this bike and you get on it. And back then, I guess now you have training wheels, but back then we didn't know what training wheels were. So you got on the bike and your mom or dad or a friend would you know, run alongside, hold it balanced, until you got the idea of how to keep the thing going. How many times did you fall? A lot. I don't think it's possible to learn to ride a bike without falling. And, you know, I think we could say that, now let me back up. Did you finally get to where you could ride the bike without falling over? Yeah. And would you say that it was your own talent that got you to ride it, or was it the person that was going alongside? Who gets the credit? Little of both, right? Yeah, little of both. Okay. Imagine that God is like running alongside of you, holding you upright. And do you still fall sometimes? Yeah, we fall. And what do? You get up and you get back on the bike, and then God's running alongside, holding you straight until you master that particular problem. And guess what? You start all over again with another problem, right? So God has his categories of problems. He has trike troubles, okay? He gets little troubles into your life. And when you're riding your trike, you know, he helps you get over those. And then when you graduate to a bike, a little bigger problems come along, and he helps you master those. Those are bike troubles, okay? Trike troubles, bike troubles. We should be happy that we've graduated to God's bike troubles, right? It shows that we're growing. You guys are dead today. Are you alive? Okay. We can have confidence that no matter what troubles come along, whether they're trike troubles or bike troubles, God is going to be right there with us every step of the way, holding us upright, making sure we get through that trouble. Now, let's say that this church family here is, it is a family. Let's say you're a part of this family, which you are, and that we're all riding our trikes or our bikes along together, and sometimes we collide, right? And we cause each other some grief or some pain or some scraped knees. And then we start yapping at each other, and we start snarling at each other, and guess what happens? The old devil's back there sitting and just grinning, a big old grin. Why is he grinning? Because we're so busy squabbling and arguing together that what? We don't have time to do what? Reach the lost that are out there that don't know anything about God. No one can learn to ride a bicycle without falling over, and no one can learn to live in this life in a sinful world without squabbles and problems and trials and tensions and hurts. But I think if we can remember that God's there, he's going to patch us up, we can move forward in a relationship. And can you imagine the kind of church that gets along with each other, that takes into consideration that we're all sinners and that we have a warm, close family that's got your back? Can you imagine that kind of a church? I would like to be a part of that kind of a church. And by God's grace, we can be a part of that kind of church. Can we not? Yeah. This isn't a new problem, by the way. And if you have your Bibles, open it to Romans chapter 14. Actually, the church has been having problems since the church was first organized after Pentecost. And Paul, who wrote the book of Acts, has had a lot of problems with problems in the church. Romans chapter 4. So we're going to find out what happened with the early church when they had problems, okay? Chapter 4, so let's start in verse 1. Paul's talking to the church members, to the church members of the Church of Rome. He says, "Except the one whose faith is weak, without doing what? Without quarreling over disputable matters." This is NIV. I like the NIV a little better for today's English. Okay. "Except the one whose faith is weak, without quarreling over disputable matters." What is a disputable matter? Okay, we don't have any answers either. Okay, a disputable matter is something that has no "thus saith the Lord." Can we say that? A disputable matter would not be "thou shalt not kill." That's pretty plain, is it not? "Thou shalt not kill," or murder is really what it says. Okay, but a disputable matter might be something that there's not a really clear... Okay, yeah, it's two opposing views, and each side, dare I say, women's ordination that this church is all are enmeshed in, I would call a disputable matter, because each side reads statements from the Bible that seem to indicate that that is the right, and then these guys over here read other statements from the Bible that seem to be this side is right. It's a disputable matter, okay? Now, back here, the disputable matter was, if you went to the market to buy a cut of meat, it was meat that had been offered to idols. And some people said, "Hey, you don't go buy that meat, you don't go buy that meat that's been offered to idols. I mean, those are demons. You're going to eat, go home and cook it and eat it, and you're going to be eating food that has been blessed by demons." And people over here said, and if you come Wednesday night, by the way, we're having a great time in the book of Isaiah Wednesday night. And we just studied this. They say, hey, an idol's just a hunk of wood. It's just a lump of lead or metal or whatever. It can't bless or hurt this meat. So what's wrong with it? Let's do it. So, verse 2. One person's faith allows them to eat anything, referring to meat, whether it's offered to idols or not. And another, whose faith is weak, doesn't eat any meat, but he eats what? Vegetables. And he's saying, hey, it doesn't matter. It's a disputable matter. If it's either meat or vegetables, they each feel like they're doing the right thing. Verse 3. The one, can somebody get me some water, please? John, Don. The one who eats everything must not treat with contempt the one who does not. Okay, so somebody that has the freedom and says, I know an idol is just a lump of wood, he doesn't have the freedom to say, those guys don't know what they're doing. Right? Yeah. The one who eats anything must not treat with contempt the one who does not, and the one who does not must not judge the one who does, for God has accepted them. So, God accepts both the people that think it's wrong and the people that think it's right. Is that a disputable matter or what? Who are you to judge someone else's servant? Are we all servants? Are we? Yeah, we are servants of God. Thank you. To their own masters, they stand or fall. Thank you very much. So it's the only one that's concerned about whether they stand or fall is who? The owner, the master. And they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand. Remember, he's back. He's right there alongside of us riding this bike. He's able to make you stand, okay? Verse 5, one person considers one day more sacred than another. Another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Now, does this mean, in fact, there's a lot of people that say this means Sabbath day doesn't mean that we should, it's what Paul's saying is, doesn't matter what day you worship on. Some people might worship on Friday, like a lot of Muslims. Some worship on Saturday, some worship on Sunday. But that's not what Paul's saying here. If you look at what it's saying is that before Jesus died on the cross, there was a whole system in place, the sacrificial system, that was needed to forgive sins. Remember, they took a lamb. If you had a sin, you took a lamb to the temple and you cut its throat, and the lamb became the sacrifice for your sin. Sorry, guys. So, in addition to the sacrificial system, they also had feast days. And sometimes these feast days, which also were used to point towards the sacrifice to come, and that's Jesus Christ, these feast days sometimes landed like on Saturdays, just like depending on the dates, they happened to land on Saturdays. Some people said, hey, Paul is saying, hey, Jesus died on the cross. We don't need the old ritual system anymore. He has become the lamb for everybody. And some people said, no. We still need to keep those feast days because Moses said that's what we should do. So that's a disputable matter. Whoever regards, verse 6, one day as special does so to the Lord. Whoever eats meat does so to the Lord, for they give thanks for God. And whoever abstains does so to the Lord and gives thanks to God. Four. Here's one of the first key things. None of us lives for ourselves alone. Do you believe that? None of us lives for ourselves alone. What does that mean? That means my life is going to affect Chris's life. That means Chris's life is going to affect Linda's life. We all are going to affect each other's lives, right? We don't live just to ourselves. Lost my place. For none of us live for ourselves alone, and none of us dies for ourselves alone. If we live for the Lord. If we die, we die for the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord, and for this reason, Christ died and returned to life so that he might be the Lord of both the dead and the living. So, 10, why then do you judge your brother or sister? Or why do you treat them with contempt? For we will all stand before God's judgment seat. Then let's skip down. Kind of running out of time here. Verse 12. So then we'll each give an account of ourselves to God. Therefore, 13, let us stop passing judgment on one another. Remember, this is judgment on disputable matters, not like what we were discussing in Sabbath school class earlier. Instead, make up your mind not to put any what? Stumbling block or obstacle in the way of a brother or sister. So what is a stumbling block? It's anything that causes your brother to stumble, right? I'm going to do whatever it takes so that Rusty doesn't stumble by something that I do. Isn't that really looking out for someone else? I'm going to do whatever it takes so that Cheryl is not offended by something I do, because I don't want to be a stumbling block to Cheryl. My dad was a pastor for many years, and he had a couple churches in Virginia, and somebody once gave him a really expensive gold watch. And it's really nice, wristwatch. And he wore it everywhere, and he was really happy with it. And after sermon one day, someone came up to him and said, that watch offends me. And he's going, what? Yeah, when you're in the pulpit and, you see me doing this, well, Dad does even more of this. And he said, every time you move your arm, it flashes. The light flashes, and it's so distracting that I can't even think of what you're saying. I don't like it. Dad took it off and said, not a problem. And from then on, he did not wear it in the pulpit. That is removing a stumbling block from somebody. Skip over to 15. We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of who? The weak, and not to please ourselves. You mean, Tim, that I can't please myself? I can't go to Taco Bell when I want to? Nope. Not if it's going to offend somebody else. Each of us should please who? Our neighbors. For their good, to build them up. Oh, that is really hard. That's really hard. Can we do it? We need to. I don't see any other way we can get along together in the heavenly kingdom without me saying, I don't want to be a stumbling block. I don't want to offend somebody. I am going to have Bill's best interest at heart. Can you imagine a church that works like that? That would be an awesome church, would it not? We can do that. We can do that here with God's grace. Sometimes people don't need to hear about how much makeup they're wearing. They don't need to hear about how much jewelry they're wearing. They don't need to hear about how bad their smoking is or what their alcohol is. They just need to know that you have their backs and that you have their best interest at heart. Oh, Tim. We belong to a church that has doctrines. We have policies and all kinds of stuff, right? Are you throwing that all out the window? It's okay for everybody to smoke and drink? It's not what I said. It's not what I said. I said that I'm looking out for the best interest of that person. And guess what? He might have a problem with smoking. He might have a problem with theft. He might have a problem with I have problems. Believe it or not, I have problems. We look out for the best. We look out for that other person and accept them just like me. Isn't that the golden rule? Do unto others like you want to be treated. I'm going to look out for that other person no matter what it takes. Even if I have to go out of my comfort zone, I am going to do what it takes. Flip over just a few pages to 1 Corinthians. And you probably know where I'm heading. 1 Corinthians 13. And we'll just read a couple of verses. Verse 1. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have what? Love. I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, which is something I can never do, but I would like to sometime say, hey, mountain, move. If I can move a mountain, and I lost my place again, do not have love, I am what? Nothing. If I give all my possessions to the poor, I give over my body to hardship that I might boast, but do not have love, I gain what? Nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't boast. It's not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. Ooh. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. I would say, brand me a heretic, I would say that God is more interested in love than he is in rules and regulations. If we can learn to do the loving thing, don't you think we would all grow in his grace? Don't you think most of the squabbles and the problems that come into the church would be resolved? I think they would be. And I'm not saying, remember, I'm not saying throw everything away. I'm talking about disputable matters, which is almost all of the problems that we have in our church is probably classified as disputable matters. We're going to have an evangelistic series here next, early next year. And we're going to have people coming into this church. And what do we want them to see or hear? Love. Thank you. It's not going to matter if you know the 28 fundamentals. To them, what are they going to see? What, you are what they think of as a Seventh-day Adventist or a Christian. And that's what they're going to see. They're not going to see 28 fundamental doctrines. And isn't what we've just been saying, we're looking out for their good, so we're going to do whatever it takes for this person to come into our church to feel welcome, to feel loving and warm. I'm really going to be branded a heretic. Oh, well. Kindness makes a person attracted to you. It's real simple. If you want to win the world for Christ, you melt it, you don't hammer it. Okay, if you want to win the world for Christ, you melt it, you do not hammer it. You know, too often we try to take the place of the Holy Spirit. And, you know, we try to make everybody do this, do that, do this, do that. And that's the wrong way. You're putting the horse, the cart before the horse. If somebody sees something in this congregation that they're excited about and they feel warm and welcome, what are they going to do? They're going to find out why. And guess what? They're going to start on their own bicycle trip with God at their side. And they're going to want to know what's going on. And the Holy Spirit's going to start working in their lives. And pretty soon, they're going to be doing the things that you wanted to list for them before they ever started. Because it's not our business, it's not our job in order to change someone's heart. Because can we really change someone's heart? No, that's a God thing. And Don and I and John can all witness before we lived in the jungle for 8 years. And we went to Thailand after that. But anyway, we visited back frequently. And you can tell those that are worshiping demons, their faces are drawn, they're scared, they're dirty, they stink. And, you know, first time I got in a Jeep with about 90 of those all over, I just died. I said, Lord, I cannot do this. I'm hanging out the window driving down the road because I couldn't breathe. But, you know, 8 years later, and guess what? Yes, we told them that it was a good thing to wash and do things like that. But, hey, the Spirit changed them. And I can drive down the road just fine. And they're clean and they're neat and they're happy. And guess what? They're wealthier because they are better at their work. They're making a little bit more money. The Spirit can change people. And too often we don't let them do it. So, first thing, the first point I want to make, don't worry, there's only two, so we're almost done. My dad would roll over in his grave because he always had 3 points. Okay, two, love for each other in the church, okay? That's point number one. What's point number two? Yeah, love for others. Very good. She gets the A. Did you know a house swallow, when it builds a nest out of sticks and stones and things, or not stones, sticks and twigs and things like that. And when it gets done, it lines its nest with what? Feathers. Yeah, it makes it, it insulates it, and it makes it a nice soft place for the baby birds. And many times they'll actually, the mother will yank the feathers out of her own hide in order to line her nest. Well, let's imagine that this church is a Chatsworth church nest. It's got wooden arms that come down here and protecting us from the elements, right? And who lines it? We do, thank you. We are the feathers. Never knew you were going to be called a feather, huh? We're the feathers. If we really love the lost the way we should be loving the lost, we want it to be warm and friendly and inviting. Remember that these people are just like Chippy, who's been sucked up by sin and blown out by circumstances and drowned by whatever, and they're weak. They need help. And they're baby birds. They're baby Christians, are they not? Yeah, and they need nurturing. You can't just expect them to suddenly grow mature. This blew my mind when I researched it, but there was a research done of 10,000 church members that went to all different kinds of denominations. Okay, 10,000 people took this survey. 79% began attending church from someone asking them, inviting them. 79%. 6% started attending a church because of the pastor. 5% started attending because of the Sabbath school Sunday school class. You know how many came in from evangelistic series? 0.5%. And yet we still, never mind. 0.5% from evangelistic series. I'm not saying series are bad. They are good. But 79% of the average Joes out there, how are they going to get here? By us inviting them. Almost 80%. There was this church that had a deacon, and nobody could ever remember seeing this deacon without a three-piece suit. He had very nice hair, not like mine, and he had very many shoes, and he was always very proper, and he worked in that. He was a perfect deacon. He ushered people down the aisles. He took up the offering. If somebody had a battery, he would go out there and help, you know, jumpstart them. And, you know, for years, he was known as the leader of the church, okay? He began to get older, as we all do, and he began to limp, so he had a harder time getting along. But he was like a fixture in the church, and no one would ever not think of him not being a deacon there. And everybody knew that whatever the problem was, he would take care of it with style and grace. Okay. This occurred in the 70s, where one Sabbath day in a large church, this was a large church, somebody came down the aisle. This was in the 70s, so we would call him a hippie. He had long, stringy hair that was dirty and filthy. He had a long, matted beard. He had torn T-shirt and filthy jeans, and he was barefoot. And he started down the center aisle, coming right down, and guess what? It wasn't the beginning of the service. It was smack in the middle of the sermon. And all the audience just gasped. What are we going to do? And he came down, and he came down, and he came down. And then he sat right there on the floor and looked up at the preacher. And here come Mr. Perfect Deacon. And all the church members said, oh, whew, he'll take care of it. No problem. He'll get this guy out of there, and we'll be all fine and go back to listening to the sermon. And because he limped, he took a long time coming down the aisle. And guess what he did when he came down to the young man? Yes. He knelt down painfully, and then he sat down on the floor next to him, and he put his arm around him, and they both stared up and listened to the rest of the sermon. The world is being sucked up by tornadoes, hurricanes. We're getting hosed down by fires and floods. You don't believe it? Look up in the news. We're getting disasters, winds, earthquakes, fire. Time is growing short for this old world. We don't have a lot of time left. You and I need to be willing to love the unlovable. Whatever it takes, love is the bottom line. Whoever walks in that door needs to be just so overwhelmed with love. It's difficult. It is. But otherwise, how are they going to learn about the one, you know, Jesus Christ, who died for you and me and that person? That's the only way. It is the only way. Sure, God could have sent his angels and we would be in the kingdom now, or we wouldn't exist. But he chose to use you and me and you and you. He chose us to be the one to share it. If people come in here and they see a bunch of cross old sinners bickering and snarling at each other, do you think they're going to stay? They're going to turn around and hightail it and say, thank God I didn't get in that church any deeper. We need to be the loving feathers that line this Chatsworth Church nest. There was a girl named Linda who, foolishly, she didn't know any better, she had a beat-up Honda Civic and decided to go from Alberta to the Yukon. And I don't know how the roads are now, but when I visited there, it was definitely four-wheel drive territory. And she thought that she could make it okay. And so she went one day from Alberta. She got into the mountain, stopped at a hotel, and asked for a 5 a.m. wake-up call. And the guy kind of scratches his head and goes, okay. And she's wondering, what's wrong with him? Well, the next morning, when you're up in the mountains like that, guess what you have? Lots of fog. You can't see this far away. So she's eating breakfast and thinking, really foolish, you know, I guess I got to wait till noon or something. And there was two truckers over there eating breakfast, and it was a tiny place. And they said, hey, come on over here and eat breakfast with us. So she went over, and they said, where are you heading? White Horse. In a beat-up Civic? You're crazy. Well, I'm going to try anyway. Well, I guess we'll just have to love you then, or hug you. And she goes, you're not laying a finger on me. And they said, no. What we mean is there's a truck in the front, and then it's going to come you, and there's going to be a truck behind. And you're going to follow the taillights up here, and there's going to be a big truck following you behind in case anything goes wrong. We call that hugging. So we're going to hug you all the way to White Horse. And as she went through the pass and mountains and all that, she took a lot of comfort in seeing those two red taillights and knowing if something broke down that she had somebody right behind her. That is what Chatsworth Church needs. People that come in here need to be hugged. They're caught in dangerous fog of life. The Christians know the way. They can lead. And another Christian following up behind to make sure everything's okay. If we were to do that, I think Chatsworth Church would be a living, breathing example of what it means to be a Christian. And that is my prayer for Chatsworth Church.